Hello and welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. I'm Katrina Foe, your host for tonight, and I want to welcome you all. I'm excited. Hello and welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. I'm Katrina Foe, your host for tonight, and I want to welcome you all. I'm excited to answer all your questions, and I hope that you've got lots of exciting things to ask questions about. I see we have a live caller, so I'm going to go ahead and just jump to that right off. Hello, you're live.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is LaVon.
Hey, LaVon, how are you doing?
I'm fine, how are you?
Good, good. So you have some questions. Let's go ahead and shoot. Tell me what's going on.
Okay, well, I have been having a lot of problems for the last year. With my SI joint, and I want to just give you a real quick history of my body so you know what's going on, but just so you know, with everything I'm about to tell you, I've never had SI joint problems ever.
Okay, just take your time, no worries, no hurry. SI joints can be very complicated, so feel free to give us all the scoop.
Okay, so I broke my hip, my left hip, in a horseback riding accident in 2002. I broke the neck of my femur bone. And I had four surgeries, the last one being a total hip replacement in 2005. And as a result of that, I have a leg length difference of about a half an inch. But I wear a lift, and Pilates is what brought to my attention that I needed to be balanced all the time. So I started Pilates in 2010, and I mean, it was life-changing for me, as it is for most people. And again, in, you know, since I broke the hip up until last year, I've never experienced any of these SI joint problems. So I just want to, it's not that I haven't had any problems. You can only imagine, you know, having that hip replacement.
Oh, yeah.
The problems that I have had. I used to get massages probably about once a month. Once I discovered them, they helped me so much because my muscles were so messed up from all the different surgeries, and I've been on crutches many times for months. And anyway, so I had, once I started Pilates, I just wasn't needing massages that often. And so I don't even know how long it was so long I hadn't had a massage. But anyway, I was offered a free one. It was on January 30th of this year, so it's been almost exactly a year. And I don't know exactly what it was. What is in my mind that I remember is I was laying on my back, and she externally rotated my leg, and my right one, for whatever reason, is what's in my mind. My left one's the broke one. And she just very gently kind of pulled on it. And I know that's probably what they do, and, you know, and she's younger, so maybe she didn't have a ton of experience, and they probably do the same thing to all people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel anything happen at that point, but during that massage, I had such an uncomfortable feeling that I just couldn't wait for it to be over. Now, you never feel that in a massage. It's usually, oh, my gosh, has it been an hour already?
Right, exactly.
It was quite the opposite. I remember thinking, I just want to go home. But, again, I didn't feel anything in particular. Well, that next day, I was so achy all across the back of my hips from one side to the other that I can't even describe. And I mentioned it to a naturopathic doctor, and she's like, oh, she must have released a lot of toxins, taken Epsom salt bath or whatever. And I did that. That really didn't do anything. And I went for a little 30-minute walk, this walk that I take all the time. I didn't even think I was going to make it home. I needed to sit down. This was like the next day. And I'm like, what is going on here? And so then about 2 days after that, I woke up and I had, you know, when you wake up and you have a stiff neck, I had to, like, turn my whole body to look to the left.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. So, again, I thought, well, I just slept wrong. And I thought, you know, I was too stiff to stretch. I thought, you know, I'll just get on the reformer and I'll just start warming up. You know, just get my body circulating and moving and whatever. And So I had warmed up. I had done some things, and I was doing a long spine, which I'd done 100 times. It's not like it was some foreign thing for my body. And I felt a sharp twinge, and I was like, oh, my gosh, what did I just do? And so I came out of that, and I couldn't even bend over.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, my gosh. So I was almost in tears because I was so upset about it. Anyway, that ended up kind of subsiding after, you know, I think I iced it, took some ibuprofen, whatever. So then, I don't know how far after that, I started getting the worst spasms in my upper back, in between my spine and my shoulder blade. Like if I sneeze, and it would be debilitating.
Wow.
Like I couldn't even breathe or move. So what I was noticing throughout the next several weeks and months was I could just feel whatever it was going all the way up my body. And it was traveling. And then, so I went to this guy that had been a PT, he was a Pilates instructor, and he noticed, and by the time I went to him, I was so stiff around my hips, it was ridiculous. And he said my right iliac crest was anteriorly rotated.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've never had anybody tell me that before, but I've never really had anybody look. So I, you know, who knows?
Right.
It's been that way or what? So I'm just throwing that out there because I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, I just felt like a mess, and I was trying to be really careful doing Pilates. I obviously wasn't doing any long spine, and I ended up going to this holistic chiropractor, which I'd gone to help my. I have some arthritis in the thumb, and he just did a world of difference for me. And he helped me tremendously. I went to him four times, and he just put me on wedges. You know, it was nothing drastic, very subtle adjustment in my SI joint, but I felt so much better. And because by this point, I was thinking, this has got to be an SI joint problem, but I had never, ever experienced that with all the trouble I've had before. Well, then I started getting these muscle strains, like serious ones, right above my hips and the back. So right where your PSIS would be, right above that, I guess.
Okay. What?
I had one probably on my left, and it eventually went away, but I got one on my right, and I had been working, I had been feeling really good. So I had, you know, I'd been working out consistently, again, trying to do it smartly, and I'm not exactly sure. It wasn't any particular exercise I was doing. I just felt the right side of my back. And just FYI, I never feel anything spinal ever in my spine. It's always right above my hips, more like that QL area, I guess, if I had to pinpoint it.
Okay.
Anyway, I got a muscle strain on the right side of my back that was so bad. And I ended up going to another chiropractor that somebody recommended, and she did ART. Have you ever heard of that? It's active release.
Yes, my sister is a specialist in that.
Awesome. Okay, well, somebody was, so it's really like almost like a really deep, deep tissue.
Yeah.
Right, so she didn't use any bones at all. And the only frustrating, you go to these people, nobody takes x-rays or anything, and they just kind of go, well, let me just do this. So it's like, I still don't know, but anyway, so I went to her 5 times. So now I'm on my 9th chiropractic visit in this year. And I think she helped me. I really do, but I think it was a muscle strain that they just get better eventually anyway, so it was kind of hard to tell.
Right.
You know, if that, but I mean, you know, obviously I needed that type of work. But it healed itself in several weeks, but it took a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably in the last couple months, I could tell I'm just getting really sore and achy again, and I just, for financial reasons, wasn't going to that holistic chiropractor. And then I was like, oh, who do I go to? You know, who helped me the most? You know, ended up going to the holistic chiropractor again. This was a couple weeks ago, and I felt like $1 million when I left there. I'm like, why did I put that off? And so I felt so good, and so I waited a day or two, and then I started exercising again, and I was doing just some mat work. I was doing some rollovers, I didn't feel anything significant, but, I mean, within a week, I had to go back to him again. And that is the night I emailed you. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, is it too loose? Is it too tight? You know, and what's frustrating is as many problems as I had before that I never had this until I had that massage that one day. I mean, my life has changed since then. And, you know, maybe I was on the brink of having that problem and it really wasn't her. I mean, and I never said anything because, God bless her, you know, I don't blame her. She was doing what she thought, you know, was a good thing.
Right.
And so I just have never said anything and I'm just dealing with this. And anyway, that's my story.
Okay. Well, so many thoughts come to mind. First off, I'm so frustrated because I just saw you and I wish I could have, like, seen you move to give you better thoughts on what I see going on. But, okay, so all of this take with a big grain of salt because, unfortunately, I can't see you right now. And that would be make things a lot easier. And I think you're very, very wise in how you're assessing the whole situation in terms of what you said about the first original massage that sent you over the edge. Because, yeah, you don't know if she really did something wrong, like hurt you, or if it was right on the brink and it was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yes.
And you'll never know, unfortunately.
I won't. And it is what it is. And I don't bring it up as a blame other than it's just when my problems started happening.
Right, right. So, unfortunately, we'll never get the why everything happened or, you know, what if I had done this instead of that. It's hard to tell, and that's the frustrating part as a practitioner because you want to know so that you understand more fully, and unfortunately, you can't. But, okay, so let me back up to the very beginning. When you originally had the hip replacement, did they do it from the posterior or from the front?
Yeah, posterior.
Okay. And did you have any problems afterwards in terms of movements that bothered you or were hard to do besides just the regular contraindications of, you know, no extreme hip flexion past 90, no across the midline, and no internal rotation?
Right. And so did all those things. And
I know you know those. I'm just mentioning them for other people that are listening.
Absolutely. And what I've noticed, and again, I noticed these things once I started Pilates because all these things are coming up that you're learning. So that leg did not want to externally rotate. But I did some research, and anything that's attached to your greater trochanter is disconnected.
Right.
And so I say that just for the listeners, too, because you know, I never really thought that deeply into it until I started Pilates. And so my leg, I had, you know, half the external rotation in that leg that I did the other leg. And then my hip flexor on
yeah.
that leg
yeah.
is so tight, it's almost comical. And again, I never noticed it till I started Pilates, but that is the longer leg as well. And so I think, like, even when my stride, when I would walk, I would never fully extend that leg. You know what I'm saying? So it was, like, always in slight flexion for years.
Okay, so the one that had the hip replacement is the longer leg.
Yes.
Oh, so interesting. Okay, because I was just guessing, assuming it was the other way. But so I guess, just for everyone listening, so when they cut the head of the femur off, they put the insert, the prosthesis, the head of the femur, the fake one, and it was longer than
mm-hmm.
yours. So, okay, which makes sense because you're a petite little person. Okay, so that's interesting. That makes sense, though, that it's in permaflexion state. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So those are the things I know. And so, and what's interesting is, you know, it's tight, but it was not strong. So it was super tight and super weak. It's like if I do teasers, oh my gosh, my quads would cramp. Terrible. And so, but I've been working on that. You know, again, once I realized, wow, that's a huge imbalance, you know, I've definitely, it is so much better. So much better. And I've been working on the external rotation. So,
how's your psoas?
What's that?
How's your psoas? Does it?
Okay,
is
that's
it
hilarious, because when I went to the lady that did the ART, that chiropractor,
mm-hmm.
that's the first thing she went for, and when she massaged it or whatever you want, it almost sent me through the roof.
Hmm.
And I said, is that supposed to be like that? She goes,
nope.
So she did it a few times, and it was better, you know, after she did that. Then the next time I saw her, it didn't hurt half as bad.
Okay, the reason I asked about the psoas, just for everyone else and for your own, is because psoas does that hip flexion. It also does the external rotation. And it also attaches in pretty high up. It's attaching to that lesser trochanter. So, again, I'm not exactly sure where they cut on your bone and such, but, you know, they could have done some things to it, or just the matter of the healing process. A lot of times, you know, it takes so long to heal and things, you know, you're moving differently and compensating. You know, it could have gotten funky, for lack of a technical term there.
It's funky. It's a perfect term for it.
Yeah, sometimes the non-technical terms make more sense.
Oh, that describes it like a T.
Okay, so we know your psoas is funky. Is it asymmetrically funky, would you say, or is it more just the one, or more symmetrically funky?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. One of the thoughts I've had is now that leg is longer, are saying, and it's only by half an inch, which doesn't sound like much, but really can wreak havoc on your body.
Now, half an inch is a big deal, and whether it's from scoliosis or some kind of like a surgery, or, you know, sometimes people actually have a leg length discrepancy, but usually it's because of a pelvic slippage or imbalance or something, mm-hmm. or a scoliosis, and that's a huge difference. So that's,
okay, and I've had physical therapists look at me, a couple of them, and it's not, well, other than that guy saying that one hip was rotated forward, I want to say functional. I know in physical therapy they have those two terms, but it's a half inch off. I mean, if I lay on my back and bend my knees where my feet are flat on the mat, my left knee's higher than my right.
Oh, so fun.
I know, I love it. Anyway, so my point was, because of that, I'm wondering if some of those muscles, you know, I wasn't born with them being that long. They weren't supposed to be that long. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
A little stretched out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, after any surgery, your muscles, you know, have all this time where they atrophy because they're not being used, and then you have to try to get them strong, and then whatever's been cut or injured or something has to rehab and get back. And, you know, usually that doesn't happen symmetrically from one side of the body to the other, whether it's the injury or a lot of times people rehab one side and they actually get the injured side stronger than the other side. And it's kind of the opposite, you know, of what you'd think of which side's the strong one. And, you know, so again, unfortunately, our system does not work the whole body as a unit, and some individual PTs will do have that more of a mindset, but what insurance covers and what they're trained is more just work on the injured area, and again, that doesn't functionally necessarily help. It sounds like you were doing well up until that point. I would probably go, if I had to guess, and again, we'll never find out the answer, so it's kind of a silly thing to bother with. I would say probably that massage was the straw that broke the camel's back, because, I mean, unless she did something like, you know, karate chop you, I really don't think somebody could do that much damage without it already being not in a great place.
Yep.
So that's my guess. Again, it doesn't really matter which way it is, but the reason I say that is because probably some things were maybe not the strongest they could have been, or they were still a little imbalanced. And the hard thing is, it's really hard to tell on yourself. You know, it's that external pair of eyes that are really, really helpful. And I know you're probably, based on where you're living, you're not getting somebody to watch you all the time.
No, definitely not.
Which is frustrating. I think we all can relate to that, because even if you live and work with, you know, a dozen other instructors and stuff, a lot of times it's hard to get your own practice with somebody else watching you and things, just because of life. And, you know, you're in the studio so long and you just want to get out when you're done and all that kind of stuff. So, total side note. All right, so, LaVon, what motions, let's speed up to right before you had the massage. Were there any areas that maybe, or exercises that were hard for you? Like your the ones you hated the most and you like to avoid.
I don't know. I just love all of them. You know, again, I would probably say things like the teaser, which I wasn't horrible at, but I could just tell. Okay, let me point this out. I had had some other training up here. An instructor from Washington came out and really pointed out how you want to relax your hip flexors, that hip crease, when you're doing just different exercises. And I looked at her like, are you nuts? Because that never relaxes on me. And so I felt like I was always tense in my hip flexor area. So like I said, doing the teaser, I could do it, but
okay, so
let
me just expand on that for a minute for everybody else and for yourself. So people say this stuff a lot, of relax your hip flexor, and you're talking about an exercise like teaser, and it's kind of comical because what is the teaser? The teaser is hip flexion, right? Is it possible to do the teaser without hip flexion? What they really mean is to take the tension and the work from rectus femoris, which is one of the quadriceps, and he does hip flexion. He's the only quad that does hip flexion, and make the psoas do that job. That's what they really mean when they're saying that. And so, you know, sometimes they'll put their fingers in your hip crease, and that's where, because rectus femoris attaches right under that ASIS, that's where you can feel it kind of pop up under your fingers. If you do a roll-up or a teaser, any of that kind of stuff, you'll feel rectus femoris. You won't feel psoas. Psoas, when he works in the way that we're trying to get him to work and do the proper amount of work, it will feel like ab work. So psoas is this weird, odd muscle that doesn't really fit in any category, really. Like, if you look in books, it's not listed with the abs, but yet it feels like an ab. It's usually listed with the hip flexors, but when you talk about the hip flexors, you're not talking about psoas. You're talking about rectus femoris and stuff, and so it's kind of a weird, he doesn't really ever fit in with anybody. He does his own little thing, and he's got so many different jobs that he does, and he's so primary and foundational, and yet you can't see him at all, so a lot of people don't know he exists and don't care because aesthetically he doesn't do anything. But what you're describing is really very common, and I don't care whether people have hip replacements or not. I would say that the majority of our American, you know, especially people that do a lot of cardio, tend to be very quad dominant. And by that I mean that rectus femoris, you know, they feel the gripping in their quads or in the hip flexors when they do a lot of the Pilates exercises. And I had a teacher, she used to have me shake my quads with my hand while I would do things to try to get out of that. And it took me probably a year working on that to try to get out of it because I was so quad dominant when I first started Pilates. So, just to clear up,
typical.
What was that?
No, that sounds very typical. I mean, and just to clarify, I didn't mean to tie the two together. That instructor wasn't saying when you do the teaser, relax the front of the hips. It was just different, like rolling like a ball.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things she was saying, to relax those. And I know even in the manual, just doing like the single leg circle, laying on your back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, relax the front of your hip. And I'm like, are you kidding? Can people actually do that?
Yeah, you can. And it's crazy hard, especially if that's your compensatory pattern.
Okay.
It's crazy hard. And I have people look at me like I'm retarded when I've talked to them about this in workshops. Okay, so here's the thing. Go back to, I forget what week it is, but it's the first round of the movement principle exercises when we do the knee fold. And that is your best friend right there. So what you want to do is go back through that exercise and put your fingers on the hip crease, like right under your ASIS, towards your leg under it, because when you're laying on your back, what is under, right? And any time that you feel that bulge under your fingers, you missed it. The easiest way to do it, because when you're in the situation you're talking about where it's just always permanently locked down, always going to autopilot, it's going to be really, really hard. The best starting place is to bring the knee up into the knee fold position and start there and just try to find the release there. and then try to work on floating it down, because again, gravity is helping you, so it should be easier there. And then the hardest would be working against gravity to bring it back up. Now, the key is that when you do this exercise, you want to make sure that your quads are not doing the work. You want it to go to your psoas. So if people, and you'll see people every time do this, they start to do the knee fold, and you'll notice their leg comes up, that one leg, into like tabletop. So their foot is like level with their knee. If you see that, or on yourself, you'll know that they're using their quads. You don't even need to put your finger in their hip crease, because the quads, that rectus femoris, not only does hip flexion, but he does knee extension. And so he's the one lifting that foot up, and it doesn't just float up into the air by itself against gravity. So what you want to do is let that heel kind of bang against the back of your butt so that it's turned off, and then really think of my favorite image. I think of how the psoas attaches and to that lesser trochanter on the inside of that thigh. So when I do it, I think of my abs pulling from my inner thigh up. I don't even think about my knee, and just let your foot kind of hang against your butt. And so I would just meditate and stay with that for a very, very long time. But mastering that feeling of the thigh bone really dropping into the hip socket, and this will be important for both legs, because even though the left side was the one that had the hip replacement, the right side is going to get funky compensatory stuff too. So they'll be different, and that's okay. But you want to think of that femur, whether it's a fake femur head or a real one, really tracking and dropping into the socket. And if the rectus femoris is on overdrive, it's going to gently pull it out of that perfect situation where it fits in there best. And so it tracks improperly. And again, in your case, excuse me, the problem isn't necessarily like an arthritis or tendonitis kind of inflammation going on. It's more of it's pulling other parts of the joint inappropriately. And for you, it's showing up in that back of the pelvis, which again, everybody's got their spot that it shows up in, and there's nothing wrong with where you're showing up. It's just the pressure is coming, it sounds like, from the front of that psoas not being strong. So I would work on those knee folds and just really meditate on it, close your eyes, take some time, play with it, and don't beat yourself up, because it could take years to get that. In terms of exercises, I would play with the same concept of the hip gliding down into the socket. The feet and straps is going to be your friend, because basically what's happening is the ropes and the spring system is kind of helping your psoas to get that hip glide, so your rectus femoris can really let go. And it'll kind of train your psoas to start to be able to take the work without it being too hard for it. And that's why the feet and straps can be really, really helpful for people that do the grippy stuff. And eventually, for example, for myself, I used to always get a clicking at the top of my single leg circles. Again, same thing. And it wasn't until I abandoned that exercise for a while, really worked on my feet and straps, that eventually I could come back and there was no clicking. So it's going to take a little while on that. But legs and springs, feet and straps, those kinds of things would really help with that. Not necessarily going up into short spine or the long spine or any of that kind of stuff, but just, you know, leg circles and that kind of thing, just to kind of do variations, allowing that pelvis to be, you know, silent and calm while the thigh is moving in the hip socket. To get that differentiation and get that loosening up. Do those exercises bother you at all, or?
No, they don't.
Okay, I hope not. If they did, that'd be a sign that I'm totally out of the wrong track. I would also recommend some psoas strengthening exercises. So my favorite would be the kneeling abdominals facing the risers, facing the ropes. And do the flat back version. So in my opinion, if you're properly set up with your chest closer to the ropes than your hands, so it's over your hands, if not a little in front of your hands, so you're not going in your neck. A strong, you know, well-centered person should do like a blue and a red. So most people I find a red is real tough, which to me, I think that, you know, blue and a red is not crazy or shouldn't be that hard for people. So that kind of gives you like a gauge of where to work to. When you do that, how does that feel?
Fine. I don't have any problems with that.
Okay. What spring do you usually do that on?
Red.
Okay. Amp it up to a red and a blue.
Okay.
And make sure you don't go up into your traps and neck stuff. You keep that really grounded and stable. And then make sure that back stays really straight and you just keep get it from the hip movement. And you'll feel it in the abs. And again, that's just going to help you get in touch with feeling your psoas. And then from there, whatever exercise you want to do, make sure if it's that flexion, try to get it in there.
Mm-hmm.
So feel it and then kind of try to ground yourself. And then anytime you feel it start to go in your quads and your hip flexory things, you know, that general term, back off and make the exercise simpler and easier, modify it for yourself so that you can get it in the psoas. So it might be a little humbling for a while. The easiest trick that I have for that is to externally rotate and then work on your adduction because the psoas also does those two movements. And rectus femoris doesn't. So that's kind of a sneaky way to work on psoas and try to turn the rectus femoris off. So here's an example. Say you're doing a roll-up. Turn the legs out and squeeze the legs together up in the inner thighs. So you could put like a towel balled up or a little ball up between the your inner thighs real high and turn your legs out so your toes are apart and everything and knees pointing out to the sides and work on it from there, and you'll find it's a little bit, no, not easy, but a little easier to find the psoas versus getting into the quads. And you can use that trick on a lot of exercises. Just add the turnout, even if it's, you know, kind of a weird thing, and even if you're limited in the turnout, that turnout will help that psoas get stronger.
Yeah, and I have actually incorporated that. Because I've probably heard you talking about that before, and so I have been starting to externally rotate to get that out of that rectus femoris, and that does help. And then also, like you say, make an exercise easier. I've actually, when I start feeling that cramp up, I'll bend my knees, and that seems to help. So obviously it's not the, you know, perfect, beautiful looking exercise, but I can do it and do it properly that way. I'm just kind of, like you say, kind of backing off a little bit.
Good, good. And you have a good grounding to be able to do that. A lot of people can't get over their egos and stuff, but it's not about making it look gorgeous. It's about making it come from the right place, which will eventually get it to looking gorgeous.
Yep.
Okay, so here's... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so here are some other thoughts. That's my first gut place to work on for you. And again, this is with me not seeing you move or anything, but just based on what you said. What I would do if I were you is a little detective work. So kind of throw out your lesson plans and do a little testing on yourself and see if there's any other areas that might also be weak, tight, loose, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the muscles that you want to test, you want to look for the adductors versus abductors. You want to check the internal versus external rotators. We already talked about the hip flexors versus the extensors, but I would check them again. And then you're going to want to check the abs versus the back extensors. And those are going to be your general areas that you're looking at in terms of muscles that attach to the pelvis that could be annoying something. So the complicated thing with the SI joint issues, and again, we're just being vague with that because, again, we don't have a diagnosis, and even if we did, you know, things change. And I think that was really interesting when you were talking on a side note that you mentioned, you know, you didn't have a diagnosis, nobody took x-rays, this one guy gave you, you know, his thoughts, but, you know, the thing is, the body changes so often, and when there's an imbalance, you know, things can change what's going on from day to day. So, you know, I think it's great to get a snapshot of what was happening one time, but sometimes people get really frozen in those diagnoses, and they feel like the body is just always that way, and it's not. It does change quite a bit. So that was a random bunny trail, but I'm going to go back to what I was talking about. So what I would do is, you know, you don't even have to do a whole workout, but just do like two or three exercises for one muscle group. So maybe just do like two or three adductor exercises and then maybe some abductor stretches. And then see how it feels that day. Okay, so the worst thing you could do is to do this lots of different things, because then it's very confusing to figure out what bothered it if something felt bad, or what was good if you did something that feels good. So just for a short time, maybe a couple weeks, just spread it out, maybe every other day, so you give yourself a little rest, so, you know, if there was any residual, it won't, you know, 2 days after, you know, annoyance of something, you won't confuse the situation. It's kind of like an elimination diet for your muscles, testing them. But you're just checking that out and go through them however order you want to.
Did you say work the adductors and stretch the abductors?
Yeah, so...
Yeah, can you say that?
Yeah, so do some exercises to strengthen and work the adductors. And on the same day, you can stretch the abductors. And so that would be one version of what might be off. The opposite would be, like, you know, a couple days later, do the opposite and work the abductors and stretch the adductors. And if neither of those annoy you, then those are in good balance. If one of them annoys you, the other one will probably feel real good. And so, you know, do the one that feels good, because that's where you need the work.
Well, and I have... been thinking, okay, it's probably my adductor, you know, or the adductor. That's at one point I thought, so I was really working on that, and again, I really didn't see any difference. And we've been talking, one thing that it's my favorite thing, but it will, on some days, I have to really limit my range of motion, is a reverse swan on a chair, and I love that, but I will get a twinge in that upper, you know, above that left hip when I do that. And so that, I don't know, does that give you any keys at all, or is that just...
What spring setting do you do it on?
A two.
Okay. You have an exo chair?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Okay, so you have them on level two. Do you do it with a round back or a flat back?
What seems to help me is if I really have a good pelvic tilt.
Okay.
No, it's not really round. I think I just have a pelvic tilt, and I would definitely say more of a flat back for sure.
Okay, so when I say round back, sometimes it doesn't look round, but you're thinking round, and you're thinking like pubic bone to the nose, and you're thinking scooping under. Is that what you're talking about, or you're thinking open chest, flat back?
I'm thinking open chest, flat back, and I guess what I'm trying to do is keep that lower back more in a neutral position.
Right, okay.
As opposed to once you start going down, it's like your whole back's extending. I just try to keep that bottom, that lower back in neutral.
Okay. Yeah, and that's fine. That's, in what position do you put your legs in?
Out. Extended out so my hip flexors are working.
Okay, so if they're straight out even with the chair and they're just hovering in space?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty probably hard on those rectus femoris and stuff. Yeah, yeah, maybe try doing that with the turned out legs and really focus, maybe even put a small ball up high, like up by your crotch, really high up to try to activate that psoas a little bit better. And maybe do it on a little, I shouldn't say lighter, easier spring. Like maybe do it on level three and see if that makes it a little more doable. You might want to do it with like something under your heels, like a big ball.
Under my heels? What do you mean?
To support your legs.
Oh, just have the legs like resting on something?
Yeah, that'd make it a lot easier, and you'd take the tension out of your hip flexors and stuff. Or you could do it with the legs in tabletop with bent legs.
I did. I tried that. I don't remember how that felt. What if I even scooted the chair up by the trap table and just had my legs resting on the table?
Oh, that would be lovely, too. You might. Have you tried the round back variation?
I don't think I have, now that you mention it.
You know, I love the round back variation. I don't even think it's in the Balanced Body book, but I think we have it in one of the lesson plans. And learners, I'm not going to remember which one it is. What I do is I'll put it on level one, so the very, very lightest you can get it. And, again, you can do it. I'd probably start with the legs in tabletop and think of scooping the pelvis under, almost like the waistband stays on the top of the chair as you come up. So you're thinking of round back. It doesn't really round a whole lot, but pulling that in to go up, and that should maybe get that psoas a little better. Eventually, you should be able to do that with the legs straight out as well. And again, I would focus on the turned out, just especially for you if you have that tendency with the hip flexors. But that one's going to get really deep into that rectus abdominis and that psoas.
Okay.
That one is like my, this is totally random separate note, but that is my benchmarker for knowing when I am back in shape after a baby, because that's like my hardest thing is to kind of undo all that lordotic tendency that the pregnancies do on me. And unfortunately right now, we're not touching that with a 10-foot pole. That'd be like the thing I would want to stay away from with my diastasis. But yeah, that's a really, really great one for anybody that tends to be lordotic or needs some extra work in those low abs. That's a great version. And I really don't know too many women that don't need a little extra help there.
No kidding.
So, yeah, try that version out. You might like it better. I mean, nothing wrong with the flat back version. It's a great version. And especially if you're not going too much in the quads, you can get some good psoas work. But I'm going to guess you're probably doing a lot more in the quads than the psoas, just what you said.
Okay.
It's also a great chest opener, which is a totally separate issue. But, yeah. Okay, so do the detective work. And again, since it's your own body, it's so fun because you can do whatever you want and you don't have to do like a whole workout and fill in the hour, because sometimes when you're doing the detective work with a client, it's really tricky to give them a whole hour workout and not touch anything else, you know what I'm saying, and not confuse and muddle the situation, and you don't know exactly what they felt and everything. So with your own body, you can really do that very easily and such. So, and I can't stress enough for yourself and for everybody else, I think the SI joint issues are by far the most complicated to figure out the muscle imbalances of any part of the body, because there's so many muscles that attach to the pelvis, and rarely is it just really clear cut there's one set of imbalances. So with that, go through them all, check them out. You might find, oh my goodness, my adductors are really, really weak compared to my abductors, you know, and you might think you have it, but then there might be a subtle or kind of a secondary imbalance, your internal versus external rotators or something like that. And so you want to make sure you check them all. And this would go if you're working with a client too, because a lot of times it can get real muddled of layers of things not being even. And, you know, then there's muscles like the psoas that do multiple things. You know, he does adduction and external rotation and hip flexion. Well, that's a lot of stuff. And
right.
So you've got all that stuff working on. It could be more your iliacus, not your psoas, that's the issue. You know, and he runs right in there and does a lot of those same motions. So it's kind of confusing there. And again, go ahead.
Well, if you're working your psoas, do you kind of work that iliacus as well? Because they kind of meld into each other, don't they?
Yeah. And usually when people cue them, they're talking about both. In the dance world, and you don't hear this so much in Pilates, but they call it the iliopsoas. And I remember when I first heard that, I went home and I looked up in my anatomy books, and I could not for the life of me find the iliopsoas. And I thought I was retarded. I'm like, what is this magical muscle they're talking about? And it's just a slang for the both. But For actually all three, the iliacus, the psoas major, and the psoas minor, is all pushed together. But, I mean, when we talk about it, if we say psoas, we really mean all three for most people, unless we're getting very, very specific. And so, yeah, it'd be psoas major and iliacus that you're talking about, and you're probably working on both of them. So, yeah, which one it is, you'd have to get real, real detailed and precise and to figure it out, and it doesn't really matter that much as long as you get them strong. So a
couple of points. One of the things that I have been doing, I guess that I've been, tell me if I'm totally off base here, but that the hip flexor on my left leg, and I'm going to say my rectus femoris as well, was so tight, and so if I had tried to work it, it just got tighter. So I was doing that stretch where you put the roller underneath your, you know, basically your sacrum, and have your right knee to the chest.
Yeah, yeah.
Have the other leg extended out, and that's actually gotten to where it's not absolutely excruciating.
Good.
Kind of nice for me, because I felt like I needed to get that a little bit more stretched out before I could start to strengthen it, because if I just worked it, it just got tighter and tighter and tighter.
Yeah.
The other thing is the kneeling side kicks on that left side. It is, I don't say it's excruciating, but it's better. But again, you know, so I know you were talking about my abductors, you know, those got messed up during surgery. I know they do. I mean, it's sensitive just a touch over there.
Yeah, yeah. And you could find that the AB and the adductors are really weak. You know, that's not crazy. So, yeah, and what you're talking about with the hip flexors being tight and weak, that's actually really common. And a lot of people just assume if it's tight that it's strong, and it's not always the case, especially in the hip flexors. So,
you know, and I'm glad that you just said that aloud. Everybody can hear that, because I think we associate tight and strong, and
yep.
It is not the case.
Not always. A lot of times things are tight and weak, and you'll get that a lot in the chest area and the hip flexors especially, because it's a postural thing that's getting them tight a lot of times. And the way people use them, the resting length is really short, but it has nothing to do with the strength in it. So like if you look back in the Balanced Body Manuals, the hip flexor exercise in the Cadillac, where they've got all this resistance and stuff, it's way too much for people. And I mean, people hold, you know, emotions and they get so amazingly bound up in some of these areas. I mean, I've had people where I'll do like a modified version of some of those and they'll start crying. I mean, the psoas just holds so much emotional and things that just throwing that out there for, especially for the new instructors that haven't maybe experienced some of that emotional stuff. I mean, because it's not really in our job description, but sometimes there's tension that our body holds in there that's more of an emotional relationship than physicality. And so sometimes you'll find those things, you know, when you open things up, which it sounds like you've done a lot of body work and might have come in contact with some of that. But you know, some of the Rolfing and the ART and things deal with some of that.
Okay.
Now, have you ever done any the foam roller on that back of the sacrum and everything?
Well, very carefully, because, again, my foam roller, I don't know if I tell you, it's one of those gray ones. I don't know. It's pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know I had somebody, you know, say, oh, you run it across your IT band, you know. I did that. This is when I first started Pilates, and I did that, and I did not have feeling in the lower part of my leg for, like, 3 months.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. Okay, well, I'm glad it happened, because now I know how careful I want to be with other people, you know. And so,
right.
And it was not to say I didn't have feeling. I mean, it's like if I touch, it's like if I didn't have feeling to the touch.
Well, a little.
Obviously, it's something.
Well, the IT bands can be very, very tight, and a lot of times it feels like a knife going in you when you do that stuff. Oh. People are, even if they're not super tight, it's holding so much, and a lot of that has to do with muscle imbalance. So then the fascia is inappropriately laying down extra fascia to compensate for the muscle imbalances. But a little history on the foam rollers, like back in the day, you know, we use the white foam rollers, and they are not as hard. So you might want to buy one of the cheaper white foam rollers just for yourself, at least. The negative thing about the white ones is that they get lumpy, and you have to replace them, whereas the green and the blue ones and stuff don't, which is nice as a studio owner because, you know, you don't have to keep replacing stuff. But the white ones are not near as hard, and, if you've got somebody with some sensitivity, it actually is very nice. There is actually another level down. There are inflatable ones that you can, you know, deflate as much as you need. And for somebody with really, really intense IT band stuff, those can be actually really helpful to work with. But you know what? There's actually one of the episodes on the Blog Talk Radio, and I could not tell you right now offhand which one it is, where I have my foam roller routine that I do like a little iPilates talk through. And there's a lot of the hip ones that might be really nice for you. Again, I would proceed very, very cautiously and slowly. And if it bothers you, back away slowly and leave it alone. But some of those areas might need to be opened up, and you might find some really great relief and some good things, especially once you've done some detective work to figure out the areas that are tight with that. And of course, you can do some self-exploration. Go with what feels good. Enjoy it and really embrace your foam roller, but you might want to get a white one or inflatable one.
Yeah, and I was even thinking, I love that one for certain things, but I'm just very cautious with it. And so I just wanted to verify, too, the knee fold that you were talking about doing. Is that where you have your knees bent, feet flat on the floor, and you slide them out, and then you externally rotate and slide them back in?
No. Okay. No, that'd be a leg slide. This is the knee fold, so you're laying in your, like, beginning position, so your knees are bent, feet flat on the floor, neutral pelvis, everything, and you're going to think of your knee floating to the ceiling, and your leg will come up. It's almost like you're going to go into tabletop with just one leg, but again, you want to keep the knee relaxed so that the quads are relaxed, so the foot will actually just kind of hang limp against your butt cheek. So you're just you're going from a flexed hip position to a more flexed hip position. And then when you're at the top, where your knee is right above your hip socket, you can play with taking a towel and hooking it behind your thigh, or just if your arms are long enough, grab the top of your knee and just thinking of that thigh bone sinking into the hip socket. And that's where I would start for you. It's just that holding, whether it's with a towel or your hand or somebody else, and just try to really relax that and find where that hip flexor, that rectus femoris, can release, and then just play. Once you get it released, can you let go and hold it there with the psoas holding it on? So again, it's an isometric contraction, finding the psoas and distinguishing between rectus femoris holding your leg up or, you know, the psoas doing it in the iliacus.
Writing, sorry.
No, go ahead, and you'll be able to listen to this again.
No, that's why I was asking. Beyond, so once my knee's up there, I'm not moving it. I'm just letting it sit there.
Well, the traditional movement principle exercise is the going up and down. But again, I would start for you with just being up there and just holding it and trying to find these things. Because what I'm saying sounds really simplistic and easy, but probably, hopefully not, but probably you'll really struggle and feel like, oh my goodness, I'm doing this wrong, this doesn't make sense, it's not possible, you know, all this kind of stuff, because it's so, you know, esoteric to try to feel the difference between the rectus femoris and actually finding that psoas turning on. So just start with the isometric at the top, and then eventually the next level would be to work on maintaining the psoas control of that thigh bone to slowly lower against gravity. Again, gravity is causing the movement, and you're just trying to slow the descent down with your psoas. And then eventually the highest level would be to use your psoas to pick up the leg in the first place and bring it up to the top.
Yeah, okay.
So you're just, like, bending your knee towards your chest. I mean, the movement itself is really simplistic. The tricky part is to get the right muscle activated, because you're probably, from what you're describing, this is not necessarily the craziest thing. I would say probably, if I have a mat class and I'm going through this, I'd say probably 75% of them are doing this. And again, if they do any type of cardio, which most people, so many cardio junkies out there now, I would almost guarantee just by knowing that they do that, that they're going to be rectus femoris dominant and have this thing.
So when I bring my leg up, am I using a towel or my knee to do that, or am I bringing it up free? Because I know I'm going to use my rectus femoris to do that.
You can do either one you want. I mean, at that point, you're just trying to find it. It's, you know, whatever you could. If I was there with you, I would bring your leg up for you.
Okay.
And I would hold it at the top and with my hands, and I would just let it, and I would give you imagery about the thigh bone sinking into the hip socket. You know, I'd probably shake your quads to try to get them to relax if they could. And then I'd kind of loosen my grip on your knee and let you try to hold it as I give you imagery about your psoas and where it attaches and how it feels like your abs are holding your leg up and all that kind of stuff.
Yep, okay.
But again, if I could do that with you, you know, you wouldn't get it probably the first time. It would be something you need to practice at home, because this is something that's a very ingrained pattern. And on a side note, if you do cardio, I would back off it for a while because of just wanting to create a new pattern. And most cardio activities are very, very hip flexor dominant.
I just do Pilates and I walk and hike, and that's it.
Fabulous. Just know that the walking and hiking might start to change your gait and everything. So you can even think about it there. And if it's annoyed, that might annoy it more, kind of thing. If this is truly the only imbalance going on.
Oh, I'm sure not, but I'm sure my hamstrings are weak. And I was trying, you know, I had somebody point that out. It's like, you need to work your hamstrings. And so I started focusing on that. And I was doing bridging on the reformer with a blue spring. Wow, is that a lot of hamstrings.
Yeah, that doesn't mess around.
But that is. So I was really trying to focus on that. And so anyway, I've bounced back and forth trying to figure out, you know, you've always said, you know, focus on, you know, find three imbalances. And that's such great advice. And, you know, so I've tried to pick that and then work on them at different times. And anyway.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're on the right track. It's just a matter of, you know, when you have surgeries like that, especially since you had so many, and, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things that are going to be displaced. You know, whether it's an injury, a surgery, or, you know, just prolonged away from your regular routine and stuff, things are going to be out of sorts, and you just kind of have to figure it all out and, you know, pick your battles. Find the one that seems the most imbalanced and intense to you, and that helps you the most. You know, when you do the detective work, which one feels the best when you do it? Focus on that one, you know, and then as that gets better, you can start to focus on some of the others as well, because you don't want to overwhelm yourself,
mm-hmm.
drive yourself insane.
Okay, well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, I always knew I had psoas issues, but so I'm going to just start with those knee folds, and I'm going to work on them until I can start lowering my leg and keep that relaxed.
Yeah, and if you want some further study, again, I'm not 100% sure it is, like, all in your psoas, because I haven't seen you move, but just based on what you said, and because a lot of people have that kind of stuff, Liz Koch, I might be saying her name wrong, it's Koch, I believe, she has a whole book on the psoas and has some great media stuff, that you can check out if you're interested in more information and stuff. And she talks about how the psoas, being where it lays right next to the organ that in Chinese medicine relates to fear. I could be totally slaughtering this whole thing. But she says there's a real strong connection muscularly with the psoas muscle and fear. So, you know, you might want to start thinking about, is there anything that scares you or you're afraid of, and is there any connection? And this could not be related to you at all, but I think just for, you know, other people, I've noticed sometimes, you know, there's sometimes things there that they can help you, especially when there's real strong imbalances with the psoas and things. So, depending on the client, when I'm talking to people, some people are more open and sensitive to that kind of connection than others. And a lot of times I don't mention any of that stuff because they're, you know, there for their fitness routine. But some people that are open to that stuff, I will mention it. It's kind of an interesting thing. But
did you say K as in kite, O-C-H?
I believe that's how you spell it, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, I'll Google it.
Yeah, they'll probably correct the spelling if I have it wrong. I love that. Did you mean this? And they correct it when you Google it and spell it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Google. But did you have any other questions, LaVon?
No, I just want to be able to do my Pilates, and I've just been so hesitant to do anything, not to disrupt things, and so...
Well, this is a good opportunity for you to redefine your view of Pilates. So Pilates is not just about doing your routine and your lesson plan, but it's about really finding your balance for yourself. So you are doing your Pilates. You're just doing it a little different right now in the season of life and what life has thrown at you, and you're taking in stride and using it to grow yourself and grow your understanding as a teacher of the body.
So. I know. There's all a purpose for this. I was like, I'll just be a better instructor when I'm all done, and, you know, I'll certainly gain more knowledge through it, so.
Well, if it helps you, I just think it's hilarious that I have this diastasis after I was teaching about this for so long. It's like, really? I needed to experience it? I think I could have done without it. But, as I always say, you're a better teacher for going through the injuries yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. It makes you, it's not that I'm not a sympathetic person or empathetic. I absolutely am, but it's made me more cautious, I think, and mm-hmm. I'm already cautious, so.
Well, it makes you more understanding because you've been there. I mean, it's one thing to be sympathetic, but it's another thing to have actually traveled in those shoes and understand a little bit deeper what's going on. So, you know, all of you out there that have injuries or have had injuries that you've worked through, it makes you refine your skills. It makes you think about anatomy more intensely and, you know, how you talk to people and how you build trust and work slowly. And it's good for us. So embrace them. And I think you're on the right path, LaVon. You're doing a great job.
All right, well, thank you, and I can't thank you enough for your time tonight.
Yeah, well, I would encourage you to do your detective work and come back to us and let us know what you found and what helped and what didn't help, just because it's so always interesting to hear the follow-up and what's happened. So it might take a little while, but let us know what's going on.
I will. I definitely will. Thank you so much for your advice tonight.
Okay, LaVon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right, and we are going to end with that. So I hope you enjoyed this fabulous SI case study. And if you have questions for next week, go ahead and email them to me. Excuse me. And if we didn't get to your question tonight, I promise we will next week. So have a great week, and send me those emails with your questions. I hope you have a wonderful night. Remember that everyone deserves to enjoy movement.